Thank you for downloading from Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Support for this podcast comes from your generous gifts and donations. You can find out more about Ravi Zacharias and the team at www.rzim.org.
Origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. How did I come to be? What point of reference do I find for meaning? How do I differentiate between good and evil? What happens to a human being when he or she dies? The answers to those four questions, when you find answers that are correspondingly true to the individual questions, and when all of the questions are put together, you have a coherent set of answers.
Origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. Four important questions about life that are not easy to answer. But when you find one answer that addresses them all, that's when you're moving in the direction of the greatest pursuit of life, discovering the truth. Hello and welcome to Let My People Think with author and apologist Ravi Zacharias. This week, a new message from Ravi, never before heard on Let My People Think, that we've titled Jesus Above All. We've chosen that title because when it comes to finding an answer to the four important questions of life, only Jesus can suffice. This is a message that Ravi recently presented to the congregation at the First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas. If you're looking for answers in life, this message might be just what you need. Here's Ravi with part one of Jesus Above All.
Thank you for that very warm welcome, and it's a delight to be here in Dallas. We do cover a lot of the globe, and sometimes you wake up in the morning and you have to check your itinerary to see where you are, make sure you're in keeping with the theme that is on hand. An honor to be asked by Pastor Jeffress to come here and speak to this great congregation. I was mentioning to the earlier service folks that when I was in my undergrad studying in Toronto, at that time, reading many of the books that your pastors of that vintage had authored, and their names are writ large in pastoral studies and biblical studies. So thank you for the contribution you all have made, not only to this city, but all over the globe, and continue to do so. I was reading a little bit of your goals and dreams and visions for what lies ahead. And when I woke up this morning, I was talking to my associate, Kryn, and saying, boy, when I look at the plans, I'm sure glad I'm not at the helm of that group. I don't have the shoulders wide enough for it, but I'm glad your pastor does and your leadership does. Do pray for them and stand with them, because like Nehemiah of old, they can never do it by themselves. They need everyone to take part and take share and take that responsibility. Your pastor asked me to speak on the subject, why Jesus? My first inclination was to take one of the ideas from the book and bring it to you, but really it would be quite problematic to do that, because the book presents a wide context, and I hope if you get a chance, you read it. It's quite densely textured, quite heavy material, and it might be a cure for insomnia if you're having a problem with that. I remember years ago flying, and a man 2 aisles away from the plane, he looked at me and he lifted up one of my books and waved at it and touched his heart that way, so I just saluted him. I was quite pleased to see that. About 30 minutes later, I got up out of my chair and I turned in the other direction. The book was on his chest and he was sound asleep. That does happen. Our books solve that problem. But seriously, it's pretty heavy material. It deals with various worldviews and the gurus that change the Western way of thought. I don't like the long title, by the way, this long subtitle, Rediscovering His Truth in an Age of Mass Marketed Spirituality. The earlier title I'd given to the publisher was very simple. It was called From Oprah to Chopra. And they didn't like that. They wanted it more dignified, so they gave it the Why Jesus. But I snuck that in one of the chapter headings, so I hope you'll be able to see what the media moguls have done and what purveyors of a different worldview can do. It's quite seductive if you're not careful about thinking. The story is told of these two guys who are carrying on a conversation, and one fellow says to the other, let's have a bet. I'm thirsty, I want to have a Coke, but I don't know if I can afford it, so let's have a bet. I'll ask myself a question, if I can answer it, you buy me a Coke. And the guy says, isn't that kind of ridiculous? He said, no. Then you ask yourself a question, and if you answer it, I'll buy you a Coke. And we'll keep going till one of us asks ourselves a question we cannot answer. Fellow says, this is a strange thing. You'll ask yourself a question, you answer it, I buy you a Coke. I ask myself a question, I answer it, you buy me a Coke. We keep going till one of us asks a question we can't answer. He says, yeah. So he said, all right, since you proposed it, why don't you start? He said, my question to me is this. How does a rabbit burrow a hole into the ground without throwing mud onto the outside? That's my question to me. How does a rabbit burrow a hole into the ground without throwing mud onto the outside? He said, my answer is, it should start digging from the inside. The other guy looked at him and said, but how can it do that? He said, I don't know, that's your question. You know, if you're C.S. Lewis is the one who said, nothing is as self-defeating as a question that has been posed without first thinking it through. When you logically follow out to a question, there are sometimes assumptions that are made. I don't have the time to digress into all of that, but when you think about the greatest question of all that's posed before a God who exists, is how can there be so much evil in this world when there's supposedly an all-powerful and an all-loving God? And people think that's sort of the happen to the heart of theism. But the truth of the matter is that is not so, because the question assumes something. It assumes the reality of evil, which means it assumes the opposite, which is the reality of good. If it assumes the reality of good, it assumes a basis for a moral law. And when you assume a moral law, you posit a moral lawgiver. But that's whom you're trying to disprove and not prove. Because if there's no moral lawgiver, there's no moral law. If there's no moral law, there's no good. If there's no good, what is evil? What is the question? But the question really assumes some things which first have to be justified. So what I'm dealing with today is actually, if you think it through carefully, the third link in the line of argument. The first link is this. Is reason rational? Is it defendable? Are the laws of logic so incontrovertible that they are certainly applicable to reality? Does logic apply to reality? We know it does in mathematics, but does it apply also in ethics? Does it apply in sustaining an argument? Do the laws of logic apply to reality? Intelligence, intelligibility. Once you grant intelligibility, you then have to ask, is it possible to get intelligibility in an effect without intelligence in the first cause? If I told you a dictionary developed because of an explosion in a printing press, would you buy that? Would you say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All of a sudden, boom, this thing exploded in a printing press, papers came together in alphabetical order, we had from A to Z. Or, you know, a dust storm goes through a junkyard and you get a jumbo 747 in its place. Would you fly in a plane like that? Now, if you take just a dictionary and assume that intelligence brought it about, do you realize there are 3.1 billion bits of information in a strand of human DNA? 3.1 billion bits of information. And if you see even a vertical photograph of what the human DNA looks like, I assure you, you will be awestricken by it. And so you start off with the reasonableness of reason and intelligence. You move to the link of intelligibility, assumes an intelligence. Now, many atheists will want to stop you there and assume now that they have sort of disproven the existence of God. Somebody like Richard Dawkins, who was recently stumped in an interaction on a radio program, and it was caught live. He said, you know, most Christians can't even name the first book of the New Testament. And the former dean of St. Paul's was in an interaction with him, and he said, Richard, do you know the full title to The Origin of Species by Darwin? And he said, yes. He said, go ahead. He couldn't. And I'm quoting him, forgive me for quoting him, but he paused and he said, oh my God, what is the title? Even an atheist had to call upon God to remind him about the title. the Guardian at the end of the week said, theists one, atheists zero. Here's a skeptic by the name of David Berlinsky, who responded to Richard Dawkins. Dawkins' book was called, book that really propelled him into fame, the strident atheist from Oxford University, a biologist. He wrote a book called The God Delusion. David Berlinsky, who's a staunch skeptic, but a scientist of even greater credentials than Dawkins, here's what Berlinsky says in the flap of his book, The Devil's Delusion. Has anyone provided a proof of God's inexistence? Not even close. Has quantum cosmology explained the emergence of the universe or why it is here? Not even close. Have the sciences explained why our universe seems to be finely tuned to allow for the existence of life? Not even close. Are physicists and biologists willing to believe in anything so long as it is not religious thought? Close enough. Has rationalism and moral thought provided us with an understanding of what is good, what is right, and what is moral? Not close enough. Has secularism in the terrible 20th century been a force for good? Not even close to being close. Is there a narrow and oppressive orthodoxy of thought and opinion within the sciences? Close enough. Does anything in the sciences or in their philosophy justify the claim that religious belief is irrational? Not even in the ballpark. Is scientific atheism a frivolous exercise in intellectual contempt? Dead on. A young corporal once came to Winston Churchill and said, Mr. Churchill, I want you to know I am a self-made man. To which Churchill said, you have just relieved God of a very solemn responsibility. When you make your own definitions about who you are, you make some assumptions which can actually be quite contradictory. So you take the link of reason, you take the link of theism, and then you come to the link of who is Jesus. Why is he the way, the truth, and the life? And I promise you, I say this to you very sincerely, the more I know of him, the more I read the Gospels and the epistles and the letters, the more I read in the scriptures, the more I understand that the other worldviews are not even close to being close. That in Christ you have this comprehensive explanation for the four deepest questions of life. Do you know what those four questions are? Origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. How did I come to be? What point of reference do I find for meaning? How do I differentiate between good and evil? What happens to a human being when he or she dies? The answers to those four questions, when you find answers that are correspondingly true to the individual questions, and when all of the questions are put together, you have a coherent set of answers. I hope you listen carefully to what I just said. When the answers to the individual questions are correspondingly true and testable individually, and then when you put all of the answers together, there is a coherence to those answers, then you will find that you are moving in the direction of the greatest pursuit of life, which is the truth. That's why Pilate missed it, drowning in political power, standing against those who were drowning in religious power. He looked at the ultimate source of truth and made the cardinal mistake when he said, "What is truth?" and didn't wait for the answer and walked away. And Jesus had said to him, they that are on the side of truth, listen to me. Intent is prior to content. Do you really want to know the truth? One of the noted skeptics who was living in the 1800s, W.E.H. Lecky, a great historian, said this amazing thing. The character of Jesus has not only been the highest pattern of virtue, but it has been the strongest incentive in its practice and has exerted so deep an influence that it may be truly said that the simple record of his 3 short years of active life has done more to regenerate and to soften mankind than all the disquisitions of philosophers and all the exhortations of moralists. His 3 short years on earth has done more to basically soften life and understand all the fine points of good and evil than all of the disquisitions of philosophers and moralists. That from a skeptic. The noted New Testament English scholar F.F. Bruce commenting on Leckie's comment, says this: that is a non-Christian, or at least not distinctly Christian, judgment of one sense in which Jesus is not only a historic figure, but also our eternal contemporary. Not only a historic figure, but also our eternal contemporary, ever present with us and ever real in his answers. I want to just take three or four ideas. This is not based on the book, because to set up the context would have been too wide and too needed in order to justify. The book takes off on the three greatest of Jesus: the greater than the temple, the greater than Jonah, and the greater than Solomon, in contradistinction to other spiritualities. I want to take a different track here this morning. The first is this: Jesus Christ gives the most perfect description of who you are at your core. How you think and why you think the way you do. He has diagnosed the malady and the condition of your heart more accurately and more precisely than anyone else has ever done or will continue to do. And I mean that very sincerely. If you take a look at what he said about you, what he says about me, what he says about all of humanity, when he talks about the heart being desperately wicked, evil, and all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. No, the modern day media people and academics don't like that description. That actually displays how seriously off the mark they are. The more they argue for their righteousness, the more they reinforce the very reality of pride. It was Blaise Pascal in the 1700s who made a profound comment. And I want you to listen very carefully to these words, because I think when you think about the fact that 200 years ago he said this, and he was razor sharp in his description. He says this: it is in vain, O man, that you seek within yourselves the cure for all of your miseries. All of your insight has led you to the knowledge that it is not in yourself that you discover the true and the good. The philosophers promised them to you, but they were not able to keep that promise because they do not know what your true state is or what your true condition is. Your principal maladies are pride, which separates you from God, and sensuality, which binds you to the earth. How could they have given you a cure for the ills they have not even understood? If they have offered God to you for an object, it is to pander to your pride and make you think like you are like him and resemble him in your nature. Those who have grasped the vanity of such pretensions have cast you down into the other end of the abyss and led you to seek your good in lust, which is the lord of animals. Wow. Your principal maladies are pride, which has separated you from God, and sensuality, which binds you to the earth. They have done nothing but foster one of these two extremes. If they offer God to you for an object, it is to make you think that you really like him, resemble him in your nature. Those who see the vanity of such pretensions have cast you down into the other end of the abyss and have led you to seek your good in lust, which is a lot of animals. You see why the new spirituality and rabid atheism are both dead wrong? Atheism wanted to do away with God. These newfangled spiritualities, what do? They end up telling you, you are God. So the destiny is the same. The root is through different verbiage. You know, you use words like mantra and tantra and chakra and karma and all of that, and everybody says, oh wow, there must be something to this because I don't even know how to pronounce them. That's exactly the way it happens. Take a look at what humanity has done to itself in the last century. Malcolm Muggeridge put it in these words: no, nothing is more empirically verifiable than the depravity of the human heart, yet nothing is at the same time more intellectually resisted. Nothing is more verifiable as the depravity of the human heart, and at the same time, nothing is more intellectually resisted. And no amount of evidence to the contrary seems to shake us off this grand opinion of ourselves. Watch the news. What do you see? Somebody firing off a rocket in order to see how they can decimate their neighbor. Yesterday's news that the American delegation is in South America for a summit meeting, And some of our Secret Service boys are caught with a prostitute in their room, and some of them are packaged up and sent back home. People putting their nation, their leadership in jeopardy over being bound to the earth in sensuality, forgetting why they are even there for a temporary visit, leave alone a human life itself. I can take you through streets of the world and tell you stories that will absolutely break your heart. Things we do to our children. Things we do to each other. Last week we were in Honolulu, speaking at the state breakfast there and doing an open forum at the University of Hawaii. And there was a packed audience at UH, and I told the earlier audience, yeah, we were there because somebody has to do it. Somebody has to go to Honolulu. So we went there. And at the end of it, a man in his middle years came to me and said, you really offended me, you know. You really offended me. And I apologized for the way I look. He said, no, that's not it. He said, you said an atheist can't be a moral person. I said, where did I say that? See how they hear what they want to hear. I said, I've been crisscrossing this globe for 4 decades. You can take any book, you can take any tape, you can take any CD, listen to anything and show me one place where I've made that statement. He said, what did you say? I said, what I said was that an atheist has no ontic, objective point of reference to rationally defend the ethical worldview. And I quoted your own atheists, Bertrand Russell, Kai Nielsen, J.I. Mackey, some of your best known thinkers. I said, do you have an objective point of reference? He said, I think I can come up with one. I said, which one? He said, self-preservation. I said, listen, my friend, if your neighbor thinks in order to preserve himself, he has to get rid of you, what do you say to that? You know what he said? Well, we have laws for that. I said, I thought you said self-preservation was the ultimate. Now you're telling me you have laws. Can you tell me how we develop our laws? And can you develop laws without having essential worth for humanity? How do you get essential worth from time plus matter plus chance? He says, you know, I think we can talk. The human heart. Where do you find a point of reference? I was in my mid-20s studying theology in Canada at that time, relatively a new believer, and I was invited to Vietnam to speak to our troops and go through the military hospitals and all of that. I did it all alone. I was young, I was single at that time, and I remember going through those military hospitals and going from bed to bed and just shaken in my image of what humanity is. Even in the burn units, some of them had to share a bed because there were not enough beds in the hospitals. I remember one night sitting out in the tip of the demilitarized zone in a little town called Quang Tri. I was sitting in the front porch looking out at an amber-colored sky that was ablaze with firepower blowing up here and blowing up there. And right in the front lawn of where I was sitting were 6 missionaries who had been murdered by the Viet Cong. I just thought and thought to myself, what goes on within the human heart? What goes on within the human heart? Its destructive capacity. I want you to realize something very important that I want to say to you here. We may think that we are not as desperately wicked because that's not what we have maneuvered in our own thinking. I'm asking you another question. When you're all alone in your own room and with your own heart, would you be proud of displaying all of the thoughts that you go through in your own mind? The Bible talks about lust, greed, and pride, all that is in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, that description of your heart is given to us by our Lord Jesus Christ. He shows you that until you realize that, you will never come to the need of a Savior. It's only when you realize how desperate your condition is that you decide you're going to walk home to your waiting Father and ask for forgiveness.
A sobering question from Ravi Zacharias. In the quiet of your own room, what thoughts flood your mind and heart? Only Christ can atone for the wickedness of our hearts. If you'd like to order this message in its entirety, call us at 1-800-448-6766 and ask for the message, Jesus Above All. You can also order online at www.rzim.org. If you enjoy the material you hear in this program, why not sign up for one of our digital publications, each of which can be delivered right to your inbox. We offer a daily reading titled A Slice of Infinity, a monthly newsletter, and a quarterly magazine called Just Thinking, in which Ravi and members of the RZIM team address the most pressing topics of the day. You can sign up for any or all of those publications online at rzim.org. And while you're on our website, let me also suggest you check out our newest offering, Ask. Ask is a DVD curriculum built to reach students of high school age and up. It provides students with the critical tools necessary for understanding their own faith and for investigating and evaluating differing worldviews. The series includes Ravi Zacharias, John Lennox, Stuart McAllister, and others. And you can order online. Let me tell you about one other aspect of this ministry. Wellspring International, our humanitarian arm. Through your prayers and support, we're able to help organizations overseas that assist women and children in need. From an orphanage in Africa to housing and jobs for women caught in sex slavery, Wellspring is at work showing God's love to a hurting world. To send any questions, comments, or donations by mail, write to RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. Next week, the conclusion of Robbie's message, Jesus Above All. I hope you can join us. Let My People Think is a listener-supported radio ministry and is furnished by Ravi Zacharias International Ministries.